Welcome to Bite-Sized Breakthroughs. I'm your host, Alex Askwell. Today, we're diving deep into a fascinating paper titled Efficiently Scaling Transformer Inference. With us, we have Dr. Paige Turner, the lead researcher behind this work, and Professor Wed Spectrum, an expert in distributed computing and machine learning. Welcome both.
Thanks, Alex. Glad to be here. Delighted to join the conversation, Alex.
Dr. Turner, could you set the stage for our listeners? What prompted this research, and what were the key challenges you were trying to address?
Certainly, Alex. Large transformer models have become incredibly powerful, achieving state-of-the-art results in natural language processing. But deploying these massive models for inference, the actual using of the model to generate text or answer questions, is surprisingly difficult. The problem boils down to efficiently handling the computational and memory demands. These models have hundreds of billions of parameters, and generative inference, unlike training, happens one token at a time. This serial dependency creates bottlenecks, especially when striving for low latency, say, for an interactive chatbot.
So it's not just about making the model big, it's about making it usable in real time, correct?
Exactly. Think of it this way, Alex. We can train a model on thousands of chips in parallel, but then we need to serve it, perhaps on just a few chips, and get a response back to the user quickly. That's where our work comes in, trying to find the optimal balance for partitioning these models to fit and run fast, and also finding ways to shrink the model's memory usage. The paper focuses on how to efficiently serve these behemoths on Google's TPU v4 infrastructure. Professor Spectrum, what is the broader historical context of this challenge? Well, Alex, the trend in NLP has been towards ever larger models, as Dr. Turner mentioned. The early breakthroughs with transformers led to models like GPT-3, Gopher, and Chinchilla, pushing the boundaries of what's possible in language generation. However, these models presented significant deployment challenges. Previous research explored model parallelism techniques, such as Megatron, GSPMD, and ALPA, to address these, largely focused on training. The research landscape also contains efforts around distillation and pruning to shrink the model size. What's innovative about Dr. Turner's work is the targeted focus on inference and the detailed analysis and optimizations tailored to the TPU architecture, specifically for generative tasks.
Dr. Turner, what would you say are the key contributions of your paper?
We believe there are a few core contributions. First, we developed an analytical model to help choose the best way to split up or partition the model across multiple TPU chips. This model is based on equations in the appendix that balance factors such as memory limitations, computational speed, and communication overhead between chips. It tells us, for a given model and application requirement, like latency, what is the best partitioning strategy. This is important because previous methods for partitioning can be difficult to understand. It is very difficult to pick the correct one, and they don't clearly show you trade-offs.
So it gives you more of a sense of why you're making a particular choice.
Precisely. Second, we combine this partitioning approach with low-level optimizations like the looped collective Einsam technique. I'll get to that in a bit. These all push the boundaries on both the speed, latency, and efficiency, MFU, or model flops utilization, of inference. MFU, by the way, measures how effectively the hardware is being used, the percentage of theoretical maximum throughput that is being achieved. Third, we showed how to significantly increase the context length, the amount of text the model can remember, by using something called multi-query attention, coupled with a clever partitioning strategy. Finally, we explored different layouts for the feedforward layer, including weight stationary and weight gathered approaches, dynamically switching between them based on the size of the input.
Before we go further, can you define multi-query attention for our listeners?
Absolutely. Standard multi-head attention involves calculating attention scores separately for multiple heads, which can be computationally expensive. Multi-query attention simplifies this by sharing the same key and value tensors across all the query heads. This reduces the memory footprint, particularly of the KV cache, the memory used to store past key and value tensors required for generation. However, this change removes a dimension that one would otherwise use for parallelization. Thus, you need to be smart about partitioning this new arrangement, which we will talk about later. Professor Spectrum, could you elaborate on the significance of these contributions in the broader context of large-scale model deployment? Dr. Turner's team addresses a critical bottleneck. The analytical model, for instance, provides a more principled and transparent way to approach partitioning, which is often treated as a black art. The focus on MFU is also crucial. It's not just about raw speed, but about maximizing the utilization of expensive hardware resources. This becomes increasingly important as models grow larger and deployment costs escalate. The work on multi-query attention and context length is also highly relevant. Many applications, such as document summarization and code generation, benefit significantly from longer context windows. Making that feasible is a major step forward. These findings really speak to how we will think about hardware design as well.
Let's dive into the methodology, Dr. Turner. Can you describe the partitioning strategies you explored in detail?
Certainly. We focused on the feed-forward and attention layers, as they are the most computationally intensive. For the feed-forward layer, we started with what's called 1D weight stationary. Here, each weight matrix is partitioned across the chips along either its input or output dimension. This means the weights stay still on the chips, while the activations are sent between the chips using all-gather and reduce-scatter operations to perform the matrix multiplications. However, communication cost remains constant regardless of the chip count, which can cause a bottleneck.
And what's the alternative? What does 2D weight stationary mean?
Next up is 2D weight stationary. Here, each weight matrix is partitioned along both its input and output dimensions. In the previous case, the memory need to load the weights and compute decreases linearly with the number of chips. This approach decreases by almost the square root of the number of chips. The trade-off is that the weight is not computed at once, and the computation must be split up over the number of chips that split the weight matrix. It requires more communication because we are chopping the data up in two dimensions, but because the weights are smaller, this enables significantly more scalability. One challenge is deciding how to divide up the dimensions into smaller pieces to be put on chips.
It's an engineering challenge.
That's right. This means that even if the 2D layout is communication limited at a certain chip count and batch size, we can continue to reduce latency by adding more chips, because communication time continues to reduce. We show in the paper that if the hidden layer size is 4 times the model dimension, then this approach becomes helpful with more than 16 chips. Finally, we also looked at weight-gathered approaches. At a high batch size and high sequence length, the amount of activations can be greater than the amount of weights. Therefore, we can send around the smaller weight and keep the activations stationary. We explored transferring the entire weight, XYZ weight gathered, only partially X weight gathered and X weight gathered.
Interesting. It sounds like the best approach depends heavily on the specific workload. What about the attention layer?
For the attention layer, the dominant cost is loading the KV cache, so we focused on reducing that. Remember, multi-query attention reduces the size of the KV cache. However, you can reduce the amount of parallelization in that layer if you aren't careful. So for multi-query attention, the key is how you partition your matrices. We considered two approaches, partition by heads versus partition by batch.
Could you explain those two and how your choice of partitioning by batch is advantageous?
If we partition by heads, we are essentially treating the attention layer as we would a feed-forward layer. While this works in the multi-head attention case, the multi-query attention case loses the savings from having a smaller key and value cache. Therefore, we chose to partition by batch, in which the matrices are partitioned over the batch dimension. One problem with this is that we now need to shuffle data around in the chip to reorganize everything, using an all-to-all collective. However, this is a great trade because the queries, keys, and values tensors are small in comparison to the KV cache, especially during the generation phase. Since we are only generating one token at a time, we care more about the KV cache's size. In the prefill phase, though, we shard over heads because the memory load is less of a problem. Professor Spectrum, how does this partitioning strategy compare to existing methods? The dynamic switching between partitioning strategies based on workload characteristics, prefill versus decode, batch size, etc., is a key differentiator. Many existing methods use a fixed partitioning strategy. Also, the focus on minimizing the memory overhead of the KV cache, particularly through the optimized multi-query attention partitioning, is a novel contribution. Existing work often treats attention as just another layer to be parallelized, without fully exploiting the specific properties of multi-query attention, particularly in memory-constrained scenarios. It makes a huge difference. Table 1 shows that optimized multi-query enables up to 32x larger context lengths compared to multi-head attention or baseline multi-query.
Dr. Turner, you mentioned looped collective Einsum. What is that, and how does it contribute to efficiency?
Looped collective Einsum is a technique that overlaps communication with computation. Remember those reduce scatter and all gather operations we talked about? Well, those involve transferring data between chips. Ideally, we'd like to do that in the background while the chips are busy performing matrix multiplications. Looped collective Einsum allows us to do just that by breaking down the communication into smaller chunks and interleaving it with the computation. This significantly reduces the overall inference time. The paper by Wang et al., 2023, details the core idea.
And what were the actual hardware and software components you used for the experiments?
Our experiments ran on up to 256 TPU v4 chips. Each chip has 32 gigabits of high bandwidth memory, HBM, and a peak compute capacity of 275 teraflops. The chips are connected in a 3D torus topology, which influences our partitioning strategies. We use JAX and XLA as our software framework. For quantization, we use the AQT library, which reduces the memory cost of 16-bit weights by converting them to int8 without significant quality loss.
So, what were some of the headline results? What kind of speedups or efficiency gains did you achieve?
On the Palm 540B model, we achieved a low batch size latency of 29 milliseconds per token during generation using int8 weight quantization. That's pretty fast for such a large model. We also achieved a model flops utilization, MFU, of 76% during large batch size processing. This means we were using 76% of the hardware's theoretical peak performance. Furthermore, and this is key, we could support a context length of 2048 tokens. By using the optimized partitioning, we have a 32 to 64x context length than other attention strategies. These context length optimizations, batch sizes, and weight settings are summarized in tables 2 and 3.
Those numbers are impressive. So what do they translate to in practice?
For an interactive application like a chatbot, this means that our implementation can process 64 tokens of text from a user, consult a cached conversation history of 1920 tokens, and generate a 64-token response in just under 2 seconds, 1.9 seconds to be precise. For offline processing, we can process nearly 2,000 tokens of input and generate 64 tokens of output with a flops efficiency of 73%.
Now let's talk about limitations. What are some of the shortcomings of this work, and what are the next steps?
A key limitation is that our experiments were primarily conducted on TPUs. While we believe the partitioning principles generalize, the optimal strategies may differ on other hardware architectures, such as GPUs. We only considered dense transformer models, and there's significant potential in exploring sparsity techniques, such as mixture of experts, to further reduce the computational cost. Also, we implemented weight quantization, but not activation quantization, which could lead to further performance gains. Finally, it would be valuable to directly compare our approach with faster transformer on identical hardware to provide a more accurate assessment. Professor Spectrum, what are your thoughts on these limitations? Those are all valid points, Dr. Turner. The hardware specificity is always a concern, and generalizing to other platforms is crucial. Sparsity and quantization are promising avenues for future research. I'd also add that the analytical model, while insightful, relies on certain assumptions about communication costs and hardware behavior. It would be beneficial to validate these assumptions more rigorously and explore more sophisticated cost models. Furthermore, and while Table D.1 goes into detail about the differences between Palm and Megatron, a larger ablation study might have revealed even further insights. Still, a good paper can't do everything.
Speaking of future directions, where do you see this research heading, Dr. Turner?
We plan to explore sparsity techniques more deeply, as well as activation quantization. We're also interested in adapting our partitioning strategies to other hardware architectures, such as GPUs. Another exciting direction is automating the search for optimal partitioning strategies even further, perhaps by incorporating our analytical model into an auto-tuning framework. This work can also be applied to models beyond just PaLM. As well, techniques that compress chip-to-chip communication promise even further gains. Professor Spectrum, what do you see as the broader impact and potential applications of this work? The immediate impact will be faster and more efficient deployment of large language models on TPUs. This will enable better performance for applications like chatbots, virtual assistants, and offline text processing. Longer term, the techniques developed in this paper can democratize access to these powerful models by reducing their cost and improving their performance. This could lead to wider adoption across various industries, from healthcare and finance to education and entertainment. I think that's one of the biggest wins, getting the models to real users.
Thank you both for such an insightful discussion. Before we wrap up, Dr. Turner, could you summarize the main takeaways for our listeners?
Absolutely. The key is this: efficiently scaling transformer inference for large models requires a holistic approach that considers partitioning strategies, low-level optimizations, and hardware characteristics. An analytical cost model can guide the selection of optimal partitioning strategies, and multi-query attention with batch-wise sharding is crucial for scaling context length. As for that padding we mentioned, don't be afraid to pad a matrix so that it fits nicely on the chip. While hardware-specific optimizations are important, the underlying principles of minimizing communication and maximizing hardware utilization are broadly applicable.
Thanks, Dr. Turner and Professor Spectrum, for sharing your expertise. That concludes our episode of Bite-Sized Breakthroughs. Join us next time for another deep dive into the world of AI.